All right, good morning to everyone. Tomazinim, nice to see everyone again.
I will take a break for a couple of weeks.
Maybe this and next, maybe a third, see how it goes, from Tehillim to look at Eish HaChayil, which of course very famous Keta from the end, the very end of the book of Mishlei, and certainly of interest to you, but of interest to everyone. And the question I start with is, why do we recite this on Friday night after Kiddush? It's a universal minhag. What's the source for it? Here's what's interesting. I didn't find a source for it. It just seemed to have arisen almost spontaneously. You find that Shalom Aleichem is based on Gemara and Shabbos, but there really is no source. There really is no source for reciting Eish HaChayil. I didn't find it in any of the Sifrei Minhagim. In fact, the first mention that I find of it is in the Tshuva of the Ben Ishchai, Yosef al-Hakam of Baghdad, a little over 100 years ago. And there he writes in the Rav Pa'olim, in Chelek Aleph, Siman Yud Gimel, he deals with the question, are you supposed to say Shalom Aleichem and Eish HaChayil on Friday night that is also Yom Tov? All right? So the implication is, of course, that it's said. He doesn't go into any background why it's said. He answers, by the way, that we do say it on those nights, Shabbos Yom Tov, except for the first night of Pesach. So we're left to speculate why that is a universal minhag. Note, he was in Iraq, Baghdad. If they said Eish HaChayil there, and they said Eish HaChayil in Europe, so somehow, sometime, at some point, it became quite extensive across the Jewish world, but without any clear indication of why that is. Of course, I mean, people will say that we want to pay tribute, the family wants to pay tribute to the wife, to the mother who prepared the meals for Shabbos. But one would think there's a source for that. I didn't see it, so we'll have to speculate on our own why that is, especially since this particular keta doesn't only apply to women, as the simple pshat would indicate. It applies, Chazal said, to many other things. Mefarshim understood it in many other contexts. These are the last 22 psukim in Mishlei. It's from Mishlei Lamed Aleph. But in fact, it begins with a different introduction. So before we start Eish HaChayil, you know, the perek itself begins Divrei Lemuel Melech, the words of Lemuel, the king, Maso Asher Yisratu Imo, a prophecy with which his mother chastised him. Okay, who's Lemuel? Rashi says that it's Shlomo HaMelech, which makes sense. He's the king. Call Lemuel, Divrei Shlomo HaMelech, Shomer Lomo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Klomar, Bishvil Sheheva Keneged Hashem. He sinned against God, so now he's dedicating everything he says to God. Lomo means to him, so this is a work that Shlomo wrote in order to honor the king, but it's really not his words. Whose words were they? Masa Asher Yisratu Imo. It's a vision that his mother Bathsheba used, prophecy that she conveyed to him in order to chastise him. Chastise him for going bad behavior. It's a good way to say it. Bad behavior as the king. Who else can criticize the king and get away with it but the king's mother? And she says at the beginning, Ma bri uma bar bitni, what is it, my son? What is it, offspring of my womb? Ume bar nidarai, the offspring of my neder. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin and Beis, the Yalkut quotes it, Milameit shikifato imo al ha'amud, means his mother tied him to a post. Amrolai said to him, Ma bri, what's with you? Ma bar bitni, what's with you, my son? Ma bar nidri, ma bri, what are you, my son? Everyone knows your father David was a Yirei Shamayim, so now they'll see you with a thousand wives, living a profligate lifestyle, and they'll say it's not the father, obviously, it's the mother. Ma bar bitni, all the women in your father's house, when they became pregnant, they would all say that they want someone, they want a child who'll be a
royal malchus, someone fit for royalty. They want someone to be a warrior. All I ever wanted was to have a son, ben zaras umimula betar v'hogun l'nevios. I want someone who would be diligent in his service of God, filled with Torah, worthy of prophecy. That's the neder that I want. That's the dream that I had for you. So what are you doing? Why are you ruining that? So she starts by saying, first, Al titein l'anashim chaylecha. Don't give your strength, your might over to women. And of course that was the great criticism of Shlomo HaMelech, that he took 1,000 wives and concubines. And she continues the criticism of her son, the chastisement of her son in the way he should govern himself and his kingdom, all of which leads up to Pasuk Yud. And Pasuk Yud starts Eishes Chayil Mi Yimtso. Now in context it would seem that these are not the words of Shlomo, but rather these are the words of his mother, and she's saying to him, Eishes Chayil Mi Yimtso, who can find this Eishes Chayil? Meaning, as opposed to all the wives that you surrounded yourself with, you don't know what you're looking for. And if you find the Eishes Chayil, then your life will be stable and your kingdom will be more secure also. And that's how she begins. And of course, the simple shot in the end of this parak, this Keta of Eishes Chayil that we highlight on Friday nights, that Eishes Chayil Mi Yimtso relates to the virtuous woman. So Mi Yimtso, who could find? What kind of question is that? I mean, who could find? Who could find? It seemed to indicate that it's a rarity, right? Is an Eishes Chayil a rarity? What do you say?
Maybe among a thousand.
Among a thousand? No, she's talking generally. So in fact, the Mitzvah says here, yes, it's a milsa de la shchicha. It's something that is quite uncommon, not very prevalent. Why is it so uncommon? It's because if you pay attention and study all the psukim, all the characteristics of the Eishes Chayil, we're talking about superwoman, superwife, and supermom, all into one. And that, in fact, is a rarity. Halavai, a person should have one of these characteristics. All of them are noble, but to have all of them, it's a lot to ask for, a lot to expect. Eishes Chayil Mi Yimtso. So what is an Eishes Chayil? We commonly translate it as a woman of valor, a woman of strength, really a woman of accomplishment. That's what Chayil is, substance. Chayil means substance. It's interesting that Ibn Ezra says Chayil means money. Eishes Chayil, a woman of money, Mi Yimtso. Who could find that? That's what he was looking for. Ibn Ezra had a bias. He was poor as a shul mouse his whole life. He ventured into a number of different businesses, all of which failed abjectly. And he died in poverty, buried in a place unknown. Unknown meaning people think he went to Israel, went to London, went to France. No one knows what happened to him. David Ezra is a poet as well, so one of his famous poems he wrote, that his mazel in business was so bad that if he would go into the tachrichim business, people would stop dying. And if he went into the candle business, the sun would never set. That's how he looked at the world. Whatever he did, in six or seven businesses that he tried, they all failed. So for him, Eishes Chayil was a woman of money, of substance. It means accomplishment. And accomplishment, therefore, is in all the variety of ways that follow. The Targum says here, Eishes Chayil means itisuk sherta, a fit, proper, worthy, virtuous woman. Virachok mipninim michra, and her value is far beyond pearls. Pearls are precious stones. It means of immeasurable value. Why is that? So for sure, elsewhere in Mishlei, Shlomo writes, Motzei Isha Motzei Tov, a person who finds a woman, good woman, has found good. And the Gemara explains in Yevamosav Samach Beis Amid Beis that the good wife brings to her husband, to her home, simcha, happiness, bracha, blessing, tova, goodness, saves him from sin, all of those phenomena without which he would not have. And that's the Gemara's phrase in the negative. person who's not married lives without simcha and tova and bracha, etc. The Gra says, when Eishes Chayil is used early in Mishlei, Eishes Chayil Teres Bailah, that the woman of accomplishment is the crown of her husband, the Gra says there, Shemiginal Bailah Shel Yavo Olav Davo Ra. She protects her husband so that nothing ill, untoward, befalls him. And that, in fact, as we know, is one of the primary responsibilities of the wife, to keep the husband out of trouble. I mean, that's a reality. There's no doubt the single man gets himself into a much more dicey situations than the married man, because the married man, if the wife knows about it, has someone who tells him, something wrong with you? What are you thinking? What are you doing? Just someone to bounce ideas off. Eishes Chayil Miyimtza, it's interesting that Sefer Hasidim writes that if you take the last letter of each of the the first letter, Aleph Ches Mem Yud, it spells out Achim, brothers. And that echoes the famous Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Yud Amar Aleph, that when a person wants to marry, Tzarech Libdok Ba'Acheha, you should check the woman's brothers, because presumably the brothers will have the same basic personality and character as their sister that he wants to marry. This we derive from the pasuk in Parshas Vo'era, that when Aaron went to marry Elisheva, she's described as Achos Aminado, Achos Nachshon, the sister of Nachshon. So Aaron knew Nachshon, knew what type of person he was, first to jump into the Red Sea. So then by extension, Elisheva would have a similar temperament, similar value system. So it's probably true, not true in every case, but it probably is true that you see in children the effect of the parenting, that both is a different parenting really for a boy than a girl, but nonetheless in terms of values, in terms of temperament, inclinations, they'll come out more or less the same. So you could have a greater insight into her by looking at him, and probably vice versa as well. That's the first word, Eishes Chayil Miyimtza. How would you find that style? Look to her brothers. So until now we've assumed the simple pshat that it refers to women, but as I indicated earlier, the Mefarshim here saw a variety of possibilities as to the identity of the Eishes Chayil. The most common one that we find in the Medrash, and the Gra in his commentary on Mishlei adopts this exclusively, is that the Eishes Chayil is the Torah. The Torah is the woman of accomplishment. And the Torah is that entity in life that we seek out for ourselves as a spouse, so to speak. It becomes our bride. And therefore we want to embrace it, and all the psukim reflect that. The Malbim says here that Eishes Chayil is the soul, the nefesh, the soul of the person, and he says not just he says it's the part of man that pursues knowledge. In terms of Torah, by the way, Chayil is 48 in Gematria. Think of the last parak of Pirkei Avos, where it says the Torah is acquired with 48 different characteristics. Kinyan Torah requires 48 things. That's Chayil. So the Malbim speaks in terms of the soul, ala nefesh, and he understands the soul also as, of course, soul is part of us, but since it has a will that often contradicts other parts of us, it's considered in this sense to be a distinct entity. And we'll refer to these on occasion. The Noam Elimelech writes in his commentary on Parshas Vayishlach, Torah says, Vayikach eshtei nashov, Yaakov separated his family to camps, greeting Esav, and he took his two wives with him. So Noam Elimelech writes that man has two wives. One is his wife, with which he has children, and the second is Nishmaso HaKadosha, his holy soul, the Nefesh HaSichlis, the part of man that is drawn to intellectual attainments. In his phrase, the part of man that has a teshuka, a yearning for avodah sabore, for service of God. So that also is like something that we want to embrace, we want to become intimate with us, that really becomes part of us, like spouses are, v'ayu l'basar echad,
And that's how we understand this entire parak. Very interestingly, the Yalkut says, Eish Yisrael Miyimtza Zo Sara. This is Sara, Imenu, and the Tanchuma, Darshans will see each pasuk in Eish Yisrael as relating to Sara. So Yalkut does, Tanchuma does as well, and says this in fact was Avram's eulogy to Sara. How did Avram eulogize Sarah? This is exactly what he said about Sarah. And each phrase, it won't come to everyone, but each phrase in the entire parak is expounded as relating to Sarah Imenu. What's that? In the context of what? The parak is praising a woman. So you see, in terms.
No, I mean, from what it says before. From those introductory seconds.
Ah, so then you have to say that, I mean, if Avram had said it originally, you have to say then that Bathsheba adopted this and used it to hammer her son over the head. Alright, as to what he should look at. Each pashat stands on its own. Or others say Eish Yisrael refers to Shabbos. What Shabbos? Shabbos HaMalka, the queen of Shabbos. And hence you'd have a connection between Shabbos and Eish Yisrael on the Lele Shabbosos. But I think there's a deeper connection which we'll get back to. Now, it might be disappointing to some to think that here you have such a nice parak that discusses women in the Sheikh Chayil, and here Chazal come along and say that it's not referring to women at all. But I think it's misplaced for two reasons, the disappointment that I see on your faces. One is that Eid HaMikra Yetzim Dei Pshuto, you can't remove a pasuk most of the time from its simple pshat. The simple pshat refers to women, and we'll see that the Midrashim understood it as referring to women, and therefore you can't completely adopt other interpretations. In fact, the Yalkut says at the end here, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Nechemya, Kishem Shenrotzan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Torah LeYisrael B'Eshem Shraim Osios, just like God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, the Torah is 22 letters, Kachu Mishabech HaNoshem HaKsheros B'Eshem Shraim Osios. So too God praises women with 22 letters. That is to say, when we say something uses 22 letters, and you'll notice it's all in alphabetical order. When something is used that has 22 letters, it means it encompasses everything that you would want to say is in here. Of course, there's more to say, but you could find the root of everything that needs to be said in here, as if it exhausts the topic. But the second reason is, if you think about it, there's something ennobling that we take everything that we cherish in life. It's Torah, or the soul, or Shabbos, or the Shechinah. Another pshat is Eish Yisrael refers to Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people, and of course women, and we use Isha as the symbol of all those good entities. That itself is something positive. As if we say, you like that now, if we say that Isha, the word Isha, the concept Isha, symbolizes all that is good in life and all that we want, so in fact there is no greater praise for women. So if it's Torah, what's Rechok Mipninim Mechra? The Torah is more distant, farther away, further away than even most precious pearls. So it's a number. I mean, the Mefarshim say that means a person wants Torah, you have to go even to a far distance to get it. I mean, people travel long distances to get Torah. But even beyond that, it's in the sense, Rechok Mipninim Mechra, that the Torah, to gain Torah, one has to go outside oneself to get it. You can't find the Torah internally. You know, it's not an uncommon malady. You can't look inside yourselves. You can't look inside ourselves in order to determine what the Torah would say or what God would say. That's what we would say, but that's not necessarily what the Torah would say. The Torah always has an element of rachav to it. Rachav is not that it's far away, but it has to be outside us. It is near, it's accessible, but nonetheless, we have to go out and seek it. I want to mention one other thing. The Malbim says, Eish Yisrael Miyimtza, he says, generally this is so, we're talking about Torah, or even women for that matter, what's the difference between Miyimtza and Verachok Mipnimin? Miyimtza is a Metziah, he says.
there are two ways of acquiring something. One is through metzia. What's a metzia? You find it. You plan on finding something? No. What's rochok? Rochok means you have a shtadlus. You have to try to do it yourselves. You have to attempt something. You have to be the initiator. Those are really two models of dating and marriage that we have. For some, it's a metzia. They just happened on the person. We used to call it, you're not allowed to use this phrase anymore. We used to call it high school sweethearts, right? You can't say that anymore, by the way. You met someone, that was it, you know, the old-fashioned way. You just have to meet them, shul, school, whatever it was. That's a metzia, that's miyimsa. But for others, it's rochok mibnin, they have to do ishtadlus, they have to go and find someone. You need to introduce, put themselves in situations where they'll find people. Those are really the two models. And finally, on this pasuk, I want to add something very interesting from the Sefer HaMisholim of Rav Yosef Chikatilla, who was one of the Gedolim in Spain in the mid-13th century. And he has a Sefer, maybe 150, 160 different parables that I remember this summer in the bus in Spain. Every day or so, I'd offer a parable that such and such is like such and such. So he says, based on the pasuk here, that Eish Yischayel, oh, you'll remember, Eish Yischayel, an Isha Tznua, a modest woman, is like a Cheder Na'ul, like a locked room. Alright? Why is an Isha Tznua like a locked room? So he writes that a locked room is a private place. Only certain people are allowed to enter it. It preserves intimacy. People can't talk about her. In other words, what is most precious about her is concealed. So if a woman is not an Isha Tznua, there's a lot to say, and people will be talking about her. But if an Isha is modest, nobody can say anything about her. She's really a locked room. There's only one thing people can say about her. She's an Isha Tznua, and that's it. Bailas Midas Yekoros, who knows? The possessor of precious and very pleasant vidos, she's mipnimi michra. She's like a pnina, like a pearl, like a precious stone, a kliyaka. Alright, what's the first attribute then of the Eish Yischayel? Batach bo lezbalo, v'shalo lo yechsar. That her husband trusts in her, v'shalo lo yechsar, and he really lacks nothing. He lacks no good in life. The Malbim says, "Batach bo lev bailo," that you'll tell me if this is true or not. He says that kirov hanashim mifazros hon ubailo ena boteach shetishmor esa sheviach. Said most women spend their husband's money, and their husbands do not trust them to guard his earnings. It says rov, most. Is that true? Not true. Not rov, yeah. Not, I mean, he should have said all. Said all, none, or minority? Right. Some, okay. But, I will this one, the Eish Yischayel, bo yiftach libo, shalo yechsem umo mikola shalo sherviach. But he can trust her in terms of his fortune. I saw the other day that I saw the other day in the paper that Chris Christie released his tax returns on Friday, and he said it's his wife's favorite week of the year when they do it. She earns about twice as much as he does. She works at Katz Fitzgerald and he's limited to the governor's salary, so therefore she gets to gloat for a week that she out earns him. So in fact he is squandering potentially her fortune, not his fortune. Now that's the Malbim's shot. Yeah, we all could have been that in his part of Russia. That's the way it was. But the key point is in terms of the trust. That's Batach Balei Baila. The trust that exists between husbands and wives has to be absolute. And the most important thing is the relationship with her husband. The Yalkut says here, in talking about Avram and Sarah, in this week's Sedra, Batach bo lev balo shenemar leman yitavli vavurech. Remember the story in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha this week, where Avram tells Sarai that he and Fasmarat, and you're beautiful, the Egyptians are going to seize you and they'll kill me. Imrina Chosia, tell them that you're my sister. Leman yitavli vavurech.
So in fact, that scheme that Avram devised, it didn't really work out that well, but nonetheless, the scheme he devised relied completely on Sarai. I mean, think about it. There's a chance that both of them could have been killed. The greater chance was, indeed, they would kill him anyway, because if she blew her cover, then he's gone and she could live on in Egypt. That's complete trust, that Avram put his life really in Sarai's hands, that he knew that he could depend on her. The shalom lo yachsar, there's no good that is missing. Rashi says, lo yechasar kol tuv. Lo yechasar tov, there's no good that's missing. In the life of the family, in the life of the husband and the wife, the husband does not feel any type of deprivation, any type of loss. Loyechzar, shalom loyechzar. He never lacks any gain at all. In fact, Rav Hirsch says here, shalom always means like booty or spoils. What's the spoils? Rav Hirsch says it's a gain that he has to which one has no claim. There's no claim. That is to say, his trust in her is justified, but nonetheless she surpasses it. That's the Eishes Chayil. It's almost, we like to think we trust ourselves, right? A person trusts the spouse in a way that even exceeds the trust we have in ourselves, that we're only looking out for the good of each other. Part of that, of course, is Gimelas Tov V'lo Ra, that she bestows upon him good and not evil, Kol Yemei Chayeha, all the days of her life. That is to say, it's complete selflessness. And this we know, I don't know how modern it is, it probably should be, but there's complete selflessness in terms of a relation with husband and wife. She doesn't favor her own needs or her own gratification, right? This usually comes out, by the way, in a speech at a bar mitzvah or a bas mitzvah, you know, for something like that, where the husband pays tribute and eternal love. But it really is the essence of marriage. And when I meet with the chasanim and kalas, I always tell them this, that the very heart of marriage is concentrating on providing happiness to the other. That's selflessness. That's what Chazal says, ahav or hav, to give and not to take. If a person focuses on giving and not taking, they'll be the happiest people around, the happiest couple. Each one thinks about how he can bring happiness to the wife to the husband, and that's what makes, that's the most important thing that we'll find in marriage. For her says she provides only happiness and not grief. And it's kol yemei chayeha, every day, every single day. In fact, I direct the newly married couples, or the engaged couples that when they get married, they should think to themselves, every morning, every night, every morning, what can I do to bring happiness to my spouse? And every evening, what do I do today to bring happiness to my spouse? If they can't answer that question well, they should open up about it. Because otherwise they will become locked in narcissism, and that'll be the destruction of any marriage. So what does all this have to do with Torah? So the Gra says, Torah is Megano Matzla, Gemalasu Tov V'lo Ra Kodim Echaya. Torah protects, and Torah saves, and it does it with Tov. What's the Tov? Mitzvos. V'lo Ra, no sins. Gemalasu Tov V'lo Ra. What Torah does, gives us a lifestyle, gives us things to do, ways to relate to Hashem, V'lo Ra, and protects us from evil, protects us from sin. That's the relationship with the husband, which is the basis of a healthy family. And now, Shamoah, or his mother, moves on to another area. Yes?
You could also go with what you were saying before, that the wife is on the side to eat her husband.
Yetzer Tov. All right, that's an indelicate way of saying it, but I'll agree. It recalls the famous Talmud of the Nitzid. You know, Nezer Kenegdo, everybody knows this because it's said so often at weddings, the Sheva Brachos, that God says to Adam, Eselo Ezer Kenegdo, make him a helpmeet opposite him. So it means a partner. But the Nitziv writes, and others as well, Ezer Kenegdo, a helpmeet that's Keneged, that's opposite him. Nitziv says the only way she's an Ezer is she's Kenegdo. But if she always agrees with him, it's not good. But if she operates as a brake on some of his wildest schemes, then she's really an Ezer,
So to be an Ezer, it's a Kenegdo.
Whereas a different drasha, Zocha Ezer, Lo Zocha Kenegdo. And if he merits, then she's an Ezer. If he doesn't merit, then she's Kenegdo. She's just antagonistic. But you could be an oppositional force, a contrary set of ideas, without necessarily being antagonistic. And that really is the technique. The wife should disagree. I guess the husband to a certain extent as well, but the wife should disagree, not all the time, but when appropriate, and then she is the greatest Ezra. That's your end mind, right? Okay. Darshat semeru fishtim v'atas v'chepet kafer. So she seeks out wool and flax, linen, v'atas v'chepet kafer, and she works it with willing hands. Alright? Rashi says, what's so great about this? Rashi says, liknos semur fishtim. Okay? This is really an Asia style. She not only does the sewing and the weaving, but she goes out and gets the raw materials. That's the point. Darshat semur fishtim. She goes out and gets the raw materials, and then she works it, does the spinning. The chayfet kapeha. She eschews any type of idleness. She works with very willing hands. From her says here, note, it doesn't say b'chefetz yodeho, b'chefetz hateho. What's the difference? The yad, the hand, is the part of man that works. The kaf means that you grasp something, you possess something. It is to say, all she wants to do is work. She hates idleness. She's always busy doing something. In fact, if you tell me, I mean, we all see it, that is the plight of the wife, the mother, especially the working mother. She's never idle. She can be busy from the morning until the night. And even during the night, her thoughts are on what to do with the children and the home, etc. Darshat Semer Fishtim. What do we know Semer Fishtim as? Shatnez, right? So she's seeking flax and linen, woolen linen rather, but she's keeping it separate. So here the Yalkut says again about Sora Imenu, Darshat Semer Ufishtim, and Yitzhak Yishmael. That a Sora who recognized, was able to distinguish between Yitzhak and Yishmael, both sons of her husband, and she saw that together they were what? Shatnez. That each could live separately, but each could not live together. And she was the one who was Doresh at that, and her husband listened to her. She's like a merchant ship, bringing her wares, her bread, from afar. She's like a merchant ship. So Malbim says here, note, that's the Malbim who said that most women squander their husband's assets. So Malbim says, if she is engaged in commerce outside the home, she knows not to do business near the home. You don't earn as much money. It's a good business sense. She knows that she can make more if she expands. She goes outside the local market. If she's in business, she'll go far away to attain what she needs in order to make a greater profit. It's very interesting. You know, we were all almost unique in the ancient world that we never had any objection. The Torah never had any objection to women working outside the home, women earning money. You never had such, you don't find such an objection to it. I had these priorities, but you never find, like in the Christian world, it was considered uncouth, and in fact, their money basically was seized. They had more or less a mercenary relationship. You know, what the woman earned belonged to the husband, in exchange for which he had to provide for all of her needs. So therefore, it was symbiotic. Although she had the right to opt out. You know, if a woman says, for example, I'll keep my, like maybe Mary Pat Christie has this relationship, I don't know. If she says, I'll keep my work product and you keep your mazonos, she has the right to say that. Chazal give her that right. So we never had any objections to women working. So the accusation that you hear, even to today, that somehow Judaism mandates that women stay in the home, it's someone just wrote this last week, in fact, I read it. It's completely false, and it belies not only our history and halach and minig, but you see the pasuk here, how the Malbim understands it. She's like a merchant ship in what she does. Now, in terms of Torah, as the Gro would have it, it's how we understand people travel far to learn Torah, wherever they feel is best. I was in Europe, people leave home at an early age. I mean, both my grandfathers, Alayhim Hashem, left home at an early age to go to yeshivas at some distance. One went to Vilna, one went to Lomja. But at an early age, I'm talking 10, 11 years old, I remember reading about, I think it was Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, who went to Slobodka. He was sent when he was 12, and the Alta said, "You're young." And he said, "I'm young, but I feel I'll be able to keep up." So the Alter Slobodka said to him, "But you don't, you're not even bar mitzvah yet." To which Rabbi Yaakov said, "What, do you need me for a minion?" And he liked his gumption. If it was not him, it might have been Ryan Cuthell, one of them, because they were there at the same time. But in fact, what about their bar mitzvah? And Aliyah right there, and that was it. That was bar mitzvah. It was nothing special. That was it. They became, you know, one day put on tefillin, and the next thing on the aliyah, and they just moved on, and that was it. That's Kani Yosocher. People went to seek out Torah. And we have in our day, you know, it's almost routine now that our children go to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. It's the same thing. You find Torah. Torah is everywhere, of course, but if you find a place where you'll be much more amenable to Torah, then you have to seek it out. That's Kani Yosocher. It's interesting, the Gemara here tells a tale. Yalkut mentions it as well. But Metziadav Pebel in the days, Rabbi Lazar of Shimon, Shimon Yochai's son, so he fell ill, and his wife squandered all of her assets, all of her dowry, to take care of him. She fed him, she cared for him, and as he was mending, she ordered him not to go to the Beis HaMedrash. He had a controversial reputation, Rabbi Lazar of Shimon. He went to work for the Roman government, arresting Jewish criminals, and a lot of Chachamim were opposed to that. And he said, "Kotzem ani mechalim en akerem. I'm just removing thorns from God's vineyard. That's all." They didn't take it. She told him not to go to the Beis Medrash because the other Chacham gave him a hard time. And instead, he had them come learn with him in the morning. And they still gave him a hard time. And she so objected that she just left him. And she said, "I'm not going to see my assets squandered when you have no will to get better. You've already destroyed all of my father's money that I had." She went back to live with her parents. And as the story unfolds, at a certain point, she sent word to her daughter to look in after Abba, and she went to see him, and she saw he's living in luxury. And what happened was, the Gemara says, there were sailors came from 60 ships, laden with everything. Earlier, the Gemara said she would cook for him different types of foods, delicacies, all which make him better. These sailors from 60 ships brought 60 containers of all types of delicacies that he would need because they had encountered a storm, a gale at sea, and the ship was in danger of capsizing, and they prayed to Hashem that in the zchus of Rav Elazar Shimon they should be saved. Sure enough, they were saved. They felt they owed him a debt. They brought him everything he needed. When the daughter saw how he was living, he said to her, "Tell your mother, Shalonu gadol mishalahem, that what we have, meaning people of Torah, is greater than what you have for your money." And he cited this pasuk, "Mimechak tavi lachma, the lechem can come even from afar." That God is going to support those in Torah if they're sincere, even from afar, even if you can't see it coming. But I think there's even simple pshat that relates to the woman, especially the modern woman. For commerce to succeed, especially maritime commerce, it requires tremendous organization. All right, every detail has to be planned in advance and taken care of. I saw last week John Stossel had a special entitled "Greed," and he spoke about greed in the positive sense, as of course we all do, but the point was that people work a better way to say it, greed is a catch your title, but self-interest. People work for self-interest. So the whole point of what he was showing is how a modern economy works. He sat with a stake in front of him, and he wondered how many people worked so he should get this stake. And why do they work? They work because what he calls greed is self-interest. It goes back to the cattle farm in South Dakota, where the steak originally was in the walking animated form. You have farmers, you have people provide the propane, the water, the feed, the grain. You have a slaughterhouse and all their workers and the truckers and everything. You have about 1,000 people who end up working in concert, not necessarily knowing of each other, but working in concert to ensure that what we want is on the table in front of us. That type of organization, that those logistics, are really what I see as implicit in the pasuk of The woman is really a socher, the wife and the mother. She's a merchant. Merchant has to deal with suppliers, wholesale, retail, pricing, inventory, has to deal with everything. Like the homemaker has to deal with the food and the home and the children and the carpool and the after school, and this one has a game. This is the tutors and the shear, and there's so many different things that you could tell me more about that women have to juggle, that it requires that type of organizational skill, which is a role, and that's really the meaning of Balat Bayis, the Balat Bayis. The balabuster is the one who has everything under control, knows what each one needs, all right, and is able to provide it. I remember I say it with tremendous gratitude. My mother, she wouldn't be well, she would always make for us our favorite foods on Shabbos. But there was my father and there were five of us, but everyone always got their favorite. That's like a socher. A merchant knows his customers, and he has to provide what the customer wants. The customer comes first. Is that the joy of the modern woman? Yes, yes. Please answer yes for me.
You're okay. Putting it in my mouth.
Right. What else? If the organization is not enough, then how about the hours? Vatokom be'od laila. She gets up while it's still night. Vatitein terafel ve'sa ve'chok l'narasel. And she gives mazon, sustenance, to her household, the choklinaro seha, and her allotment to the maidens. All depends how many maidens you have to feed in your house. The bais these days is larger, but it means she arises while it's still night to give each his or her due. And Chazal say here, I think it's the Malbim, children get teref leveisa. They get unlimited, whatever they need. The staff gets whatever they're allotted. Because their mother can't appreciate this. He has to get up, wake them up, make breakfast, make lunch, set them off on their day. That's what it is. Chazal say, by the way, in other contexts, the Gra, the Torah is best studied at night. Ibn Rashi says here, it's like a good Rebbe who knows how to teach each child. Rashi, in his the parable of the Torah, is actually at the end of the parak. So Rashi says here, "Vatakom ba'od laila, mashkimin ba'ashmoros." The person gets up early to learn in the morning. Vatitin tevul v'saw shoneh harav l'tamidim achok akotzuv lahem. The good Rebbe, the good teacher, like the good parent, like the good mother and spouse, knows how to give what the student needs. Knows how to talk to that child, knows what's appropriate for each child. The days of one size fits all in education, I think, are behind us, correct? What a child needs, what the student needs, is not the same for everybody. And the good Rebbe recognizes that, just like the good Rebbe, like the good coach for that matter, knows who needs a strong hand and who needs a soft hand. Who responds better to words of encouragement, who responds better to words of chastisement. That's what a parent knows, that's what the Rebbe knows. Certainly that's what's okay. That's part of the Eishes Chayil, that's the part of having so many people to accommodate. So far we've looked at the Eishes Chayil in terms of the husband, in terms of the family as well. We still have a question. Obviously, the praising the wife and mother, woman of the house, Friday night, because she prepared Shabbos. But, in fact, what's the deeper connection
between Eishes Chayil and Shabbos and all these praises. For that, I implore you to come back next week. I thank you all very much. So tonight.